He is a very mercurial character, but he has come to acquire a certain number of common descriptive sort of characteristics over time. Essentially, he's a devil figure. He has blazing red eyes. He wears white, tight-fitting clothing. He has metallic claws, at least in the early days. And then he also wore a dark cloak, which allowed him to hide in the shadows. He sometimes was said to glow, as if he was coated in phosphorus or in flame. My name's Dr. Carl Bell. I'm the author of a book, The Legend of Spring-Heel Jack, Victorian Urban Folklore and Popular Cultures. And then another particular characteristic of his is his athleticism, his ability to move very swiftly. And over time, this develops into an ability to leap. And as the stories get exaggerated, so the leaping becomes exaggerated. So eventually, by the end of the century, stories are saying that he is leaping up tall buildings in a single bound, very much like Superman.
Oh, jolly is the night when the stars are shining bright and the moon is hid from sight beneath the sea.
The earliest accounts of where the Spring-Heel Jack legend began, from somewhere in autumn, it's hard to say, perhaps September, October 1837, through to, if we say 1904 is the most sort of fleshed out example, but then you have got example in 1938, so almost exactly 100 years of this character existing. He starts on the periphery in London. His first name is far less interesting than Spring-Heel Jack. He's actually known as the Suburban Ghost. And that's generally the areas that he sticks to.
Typical London streetscape in the 19th century was very busy, very highly populated. But London was also very much more a local city. Small areas were where people concentrated, so people lived their lives on a smaller scale. So just each few streets would have had services, such as local shops and definitely a street market, if not actually a covered market. So you would have had lots of noises to do with retail, to do with open-air selling. And the atmosphere would have been quite commercial and definitely very busy with people going about their business all the time. And that would change quite significantly as night fell. My name's Lucy Ingalls and I'm a historian. And I specialise mainly in London and I work a lot on the interactions between how people understand history and how it would have been to exist in the past.
I think there's a number of things that are unsettling about Spring-Heel Jack. One is obviously his appearance. He is shockingly, you know, he's frightening. And if we go with the prankster interpretation that comes from many of the newspaper articles, he was meant to be frightening. That was the whole point. It was shock value. But then there are other aspects to why he was so unsettling. He was particularly vicious in his attacks. Extremely callous and quite brutal in the way that he would attack people, particularly targeting young women, and he would leave them cut and bruised.
You know, he's verging on an assault at night. So there's a kind of physical, mundane fear of this, of being attacked at night. And then there's the supernatural angles, you know, what exactly is this person, this being?
There's also the fear of his ubiquity. He seemed to be able to pop up anywhere and everywhere around London, often in the same night in different places across the capital. So there's always the fear of not knowing where he would appear next.
He moved around quite a lot, whereas lots of the attackers tend to stay within one area. So you have a better idea about where they're going to be if they're in your area.
Nobody seemed capable of capturing him either. So he was very much a law unto himself. All of those things combined served to unsettle the population of London, particularly in the late 1830s.
Then I'm out upon the track, for my name is Spring-Heel Jack, and I love the winter darkness for a spree. From roof to roof I leap, when the people are asleep, and down the walls I creep, without a sound.
I mean, his main types of attack were very much about surprise attacks. They were an attempt to deceive and then to suddenly attack people. They were nearly all nocturnal attacks.
There's this sense of the night closing around you. And then there's suddenly, perhaps, an extra sense. If you're living in a culture during these spates of street attacks, I think that would have been really quite frightening.
He had, whether he realised it or not, whether it was deliberate or not, a flair for the dramatic, for this very pale creature coming out of the darkness suddenly and surprising people. Now, in earlier accounts, he does physically assault people. This could be mainly through sort of cutting and bruising. He's something of a thug in that way. But there's also a kind of a psychological attack in the shock factor of suddenly being confronted in what was classed as a modern city in the 19th century by something that seemed to have fallen from the Middle Ages in terms of a demon.
Springfield Jack starts as a sort of natural hoax, someone who's jumping out on people and scaring them in a bizarre costume. But the reports and letters to the newspapers about this outrage soon starts generating legends very quickly. And by legends, I mean stories which seem to be based on fact. And it starts accruing these more diabolic associations. How could Spring Hill Jack jump so far, so high? How could he escape constantly from every scene? Why couldn't he be caught? Well, clearly, then he must have some other powers, something more than normal.
The most famous event that really promoted him into sort of media attention was a particular attack in February 1838, when he attacked the household of the Allsop family living in Bow. And he just turned up at the door, and he was not in disguise at the time. He knocked on the door, and Jane Allsop, an 18-year-old girl, one of three sisters in the house, came out to see what the noise was about. He said he was a policeman, and he said that they'd caught Springhill Jack in the lane, and could she bring a candle as quickly as possible? She rushed into the house, she got the candle, she brought it back, and when she gave it to him, she said that he kind of put it to his chest, and then he threw off his cloak, and it revealed this horrible appearance. This is kind of where we get the glowing red eyes and the sort of demonic image from. And then he blew a ball of flame into her face. After that, he then started to attack her. He did supposedly have these metallic claws which ripped at her hair and her clothes and her skin. She got away from him, got to the door. He caught her again and viciously attacked her, pulling out clumps of hair. And it was only her older sister in the house who managed to pull her inside and then lock the door that saved her. And even then, he continued to sort of knock on the door and frighten the family until they went upstairs and called for help from the top floor windows. The reason why this stuck and sort of become the key example is that the Allsop family, respectable sort of business, middle-class family, were willing to go to a magistrate and actually testify about this attack. So unlike the haze of rumour that had been circulating since the autumn before, in February 1838, you actually have some real people with real names come before a magistrate and tell people about this case and this attack.
The Springhill Jack is different because it's built so much into people's minds that he's this London myth. And is he a real man? Is he a real person? Which, of course, we know he can't be just one single person. So it allows him to act out. So he could be making a statement. So with the Allsop case, he's impersonating a policeman. Is that making the public distrust policemen? He's coming to the house and he's taking the daughter out of the house. It's an all-pervading fear of the male householder that someone is going to come in and take his family, and particularly take vulnerable female children. So it represents different things at different times.
Disgraceful outrage. On Sunday evening, as a young female, disgraceful about 14 outrage. Years of age,
on Sunday evening, as a young female about 14 years of age,
disgraceful outrage on Sunday evening, as a young female about 14 years of age, named Heard, residing in Park Square, was returning to her home.
When near the bottom of Park Street, she was seized hold of by a tall man,
dressed in rough greatcoat, who, with many imprecations, if she uttered a syllable, took out a pair of sharp scissors, and in a minute cut off the whole...
Most commonly, these kind of rumours of these attacks in particular caused people in London to become very afraid, understandably. There were many, many reports that women and children were no longer willing to go out once it got dark, because they were scared that Spring Hill Jack would attack them.
The London soundscape at night would have been very different to the day. It would have been quieter, but there still would have been some of the similar sounds. The sounds of horses still moving through the streets, and transport, so hackney carriages as well. You would have heard the odd train if you were near a railway line. And you would have heard perhaps the odd voice, but you would probably have heard the police making themselves known as they walked around at various hours.
You have to remember, in urban London this time, lighting at night, particularly in the winter months, it's dark early. You live half the time in the dark, a candlelit dark. And so it's a time for storytelling. It's a time when going out at night is, you know, somewhat different from today. We're used to, you know, a world which is constantly being lit. And so there are stories of ghosts that circulate regularly, and they're told around the far side. And ghosts are regularly reported on the streets of London at this time. So when the rumours about Spring Hill Jack come along, you know, it fits into one, notions of diabolic characters, literary and cultural, but also it fits into this, you know, widespread belief in ghosts, and ghosts, that ghosts roam around at night in the streets and you might encounter them. I am Professor Owen Davies, and I study a whole range of areas around witchcraft, magic, ghosts, popular medicine. And that takes me right back to ancient times, right through to the 20th century, and modern contemporary beliefs as well.
London goes through these really interesting phases and patches of ghost reports, and they seem to be really specific. So they happen in a graveyard, or they happen in a house in South London. You never really know how set up they are.
We're obviously experiencing a time when more and more of the population are moving to urban areas, but in rural areas there's still a belief in some parts of the country in fairies. There are witches. People commonly fear witches still. They're not entirely supernatural beings, but at the same time have supernatural qualities. And there's a world of angels and devils. People still believe that the devil stalked the land. You might see him on a dark night in a dark cloak with cloven feet. And sometimes you still get a few panics about cloven feet in the snow at night, and people start interpreting that this is the devil. So it's still a world, even in urban areas, where people might expect to encounter supernatural beings.
The thing that I find fascinating about Spring Hill Jack is the same thing that the Victorians found fascinating about Spring Hill Jack. And I think it's really that discordant dimension between London as perhaps one of the most, if not the most, modern city of that time. And then you have a supposedly supernatural entity running around its streets and frightening people. But also, it's because he is his own thing. As I've suggested, he's not just a ghost, or he's not just a demon. He seems to be a magnet that draws together a number of different powerful supernatural ideas and entities into one particular figure.
Spring Hill Jack involves so many different aspects of our fear about what street attack and street violence is, that he is continually fascinating as a London character.
And I bound along the street, frightening everyone I meet, till they talk of me in all the country round.